Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by WordPress. More websites run on WordPress than any other platform. Create your website today and get 50% off at WordPress.com/NSS. That's WordPress.com/NSS. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/NSS.
Blazing fast electric skateboard. Should you trust LastPass and mental health and tech? Live from the Twit East Side Studios, it's the new screensavers.
Wilhelm, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen.
I did not fall off the skateboard, and I am actually more proud of that than I really want to admit.
I had no idea you were a skater.
I fell off a lot of skateboards in seventh grade. They built a skate park in Corvallis, Oregon, and I would try to skate on it, and I would not do very well. So,
Tony Hawk Jr. right here. We're going to review that skateboard. It's a motorized skateboard, electric skateboard. We're going to review it. It was a Kickstarter. It's now available. It's sad and lonely sitting there all by itself. Somebody's going to need to get on
there. It gets a lot of attention in the office, though. People kind of are gravitated towards it.
We have a lot of video of people risking their life and limb. Except me. I did not get on it.
And why did you not get on it? What was the interest?
I don't want to risk my life and limb.
You only have one limb? You've got like four limb. At least.
Lose both limbs.
For the sake of the Twit family, can't you just give up just one limb?
Give up one limb, Leo. Just
saying,
one.
You know, a little more effort.
Also, Steve Gibson's here. Gibson's here to talk about LastPass. Is it safe to still use LastPass? It's our recommended password vault.
Had a rough week, but we'll talk about it.
Had a rough month.
Had a rough month, even.
Thanks to Tavis Ormandy. Nathan's going to review the new Sonos speaker, the Playbase. What is it called? Just the Playbase, the new Playbase. Huh?
Yeah,
Playbase
is
beautiful.
It's beautiful and huge.
Yeah, and it's on the floor. But we won't talk about that right now. Also, there it is. My old friend Russ Pitts, who used to work with us at Tech TV and left in a blaze of glory with the famous Eagle Spit memo. Interestingly enough, he's created a nonprofit called Take This to talk about creating safe spaces for people at tech conferences.
Which is more important than you would guess up front. So I'm actually very excited about that.
I think this is great.
It's a really good idea.
In my era, you know, when you go to a rock concert, you go to Woodstock, they'd have a chill out tent if you took bad acid. This is like that. Just one thing I learned. Do not stay away from the brown acid. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, that's not going to be an issue. I think I got that one on lockdown. We've improved acid production since the 1412.
Apparently, I don't know.
Apparently.
1452.
Thank you.
We have a review. Miriam Joar will join us with a review of the hot new Android phone from LG, the G6.
I'm actually excited about that, too.
Why did they not license that song? Like a G6. You know that song?
I think that's the reason why they didn't, because then you would start dancing and then the sales would plummet and then crash and explode. You would turn the sales into a Galaxy Note 7.
I'm still reeling because I just found out Closing Time is about childbirth, and I did not know that.
That's really a call to watch the pre-show, because you would understand these jokes a little bit better. But welcome to the show.
Wow. You weren't here. So we're going to answer your questions. We've got a tech question for the call for help. We've got the mailbag, and I'm going to do some demos of some stuff. But first, the hot topics. Big story.
Yeah.
This, I think, is unprecedented. Apple on Tuesday invited, I don't know when they invited, but it went public on Tuesday.
Exactly.
Only five journalists, and not the usual suspects. Not Walt Mossberg, by the way, he's retiring.
Yeah, shout out to Walt, by the way.
Segue. 47 years reporting. He's been reporting technology since the early 90s. And he's going to retire later this year.
After their conference in June.
Yeah.
Yeah, so shout out to Walt, man.
Shout out. Thank God. Now I'm the old man.
You are officially the oldest man.
Yeah.
I think Bezos has like negative 10 years on you.
I'll grow a goatee. Well, it's good. Yeah, I look good though.
I don't think we'd allow that.
No?
That'd be bad.
Anyway, Walt was not invited. In fact, the usual suspects weren't invited, mostly bloggers. Lance Ulanoff from Mashable. Ina Fried, now she's now at Axios.
Yes, Ina Fried's fantastic.
Love Ina Fried. Good choice.
Very good choice.
John Pachkowski, who's covered Apple for a long time.
He's now at BuzzFeed.
He's at BuzzFeed. I know, it's very confusing.
Formerly at Recode as well.
Right. These guys move around like crazy. But these are all blogs.
Wait,
right?
You missed my old boss.
John Gruber of Daring Fireball, which is really an Apple fan blog more than anything else.
I'll leave that one alone. And there's one other person.
And
from TechCrunch, there was.
TechCrunch.
There was.
Sorry, he's going to be mad. I can't remember his name.
Matthew
Panzerino. Thank you very much. All I needed was the first name. Anyway, so those are the five. They went in. We don't know what the ground rules were. It may very well be that they were told, you can't talk about this part, but you can talk about this part. We don't know. But they were briefed by Phil Schiller, by Craig Federighi, who's in charge of software at Apple. And Phil Schiller is the chief of marketing.
Yes.
And a third fellow who I don't know the name. I didn't recognize the name of. But
two of the biggest names we see at the Apple Unveil conference.
The third guy was the PR.
There.
Was with the PR.
Yes.
And they met in the design room where they do prototypes, and they had machines covered with black cloth. And I'm sure as Gruber and Panzerino and Fried walk in the door, they go, oh, they're going to take the cloth off. We're going to see something cool and new. No, this was not John Ternus. That's his name. This was not a reveal. This was a weird, weird briefing in which they said, we blew it with the Mac Pro. We blew
He's
it with the Mac Pro.
They didn't actually directly say that.
Okay. They said,
but you're correct.
We made
you're
a
correct.
Machine 3 years ago, which Leo bought. They didn't say that either. For $3,000.
This is the
neglected to
version.
Update it for 3 years, and then discovered, lo and behold, oh, we can't upgrade it. The way it's designed, the thermal core, we can't update it, so we're throwing out the trash can design and starting over. And oh, by the way, we won't have a new Mac Pro this year because it's going to take us, because we're just a small company with only a few small people, and it's going to take us at least a year to figure out what to do next.
And that's a preview of Leo's one-man play called Old Man Shouts at Apple, coming to Broadway near you. I mean, that was kind of an epic little rant, but the gist is there is a new Mac Pro coming, which I'm very excited about.
Well, okay. There's vaporware coming. Let's point this out.
Okay, Apple, they actually build things, right? So if they say it's going to come out next year, roughly, I believe it. And I said it because I really want one. Because this is
They
my
did
work.
Not say it's coming out next year.
I'm reading between
they
the
lines.
They
said it's not coming out this year. They did not say when.
If it comes out in 2020, I'll be fully
I think it's as
now.
Close to vaporware as you can get.
Really?
And I think, well, I mean, this is interpretation. Okay. But I think the message really was, please, don't be mad at us, creatives and professionals. We understand that you need a new computer, but we just don't have one yet because we made a mistake with the old one, and it's going to take us a while. So please, whatever you do, don't go out and buy a Windows machine like that Surface Studio. Please bear with us. And they said there will be new Macs with more Pro features.
And they did do a spec bump on the current Mac Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's it's
not a spec
though.
Bump. All they did was they said the base model now will be the high-end model. Do not buy it. It's still three-year-old technology. It's a three-year-old AMD GPU.
You didn't like it so much you gave your Mac Pro to Nate OG.
I did.
I was on that episode of Twit.
And then handed it to him.
And then you hired him.
You know why?
Afterwards.
Well,
smart.
It wasn't related. Those were unrelated. But the reason I didn't, I was using it as a doorstop. I thought he'd appreciate
it. Geez. So actually it was a $3,000 hunk of wood for you equivalent.
I'm a little angry about that. Okay, I'm going to take my personal feelings out of it. I do feel like this is unprecedented. Apple never apologizes. In effect, they apologized.
It was.
Apple never admits they made a mistake. They'd made a mistake. And I think it's a little bit of a weird briefing because they didn't make it. They just said, so this is, we're sorry, but bear with us. And I feel like this is as close to vaporware as you're going to get, really.
I think that's a reasonable way to phrase it. It was a quasi-apology, and it was more of a point that they're saying, we heard all the feedback. We didn't just ignore it. We read all the blog posts and all the forums and so forth, and they're active, and people were very passionate about this. But just for me, I use OS X at work, and I'm very glad that eventually there will be a new line of Pro machines that I can use, because this is an early 2015 MacBook Pro, and it is just far too slow for my needs. So I'm looking forward to the next actual hardcore desktop that I can buy inside of the Mac realm to use day-to-day, because I run a lot of monitors.
I think Ina asked, are you going to ever do touchscreen? They said no.
Oh, gosh.
Somebody, I think maybe, you know, again, said, how about the Mac Mini? They said, yeah, we're going to keep that around.
But there were new rumors out on 905 Mac and Mac Mac rumor world monger people that they were going to do
one of my favorite sites.
Fantastic. Top 10 of all the tech blogs in the world. But there will be new Mac Minis, one of which will be taller, actually. So I'm presumed it'll have more power to it. I don't know when, but I'm looking forward to that as well.
I feel like this is sad, is all I can say.
Oh,
I just feel
Leo.
Like it's sad. And I say this as a macOS fan.
Okay.
I just feel like Apple, here's what I interpret this as. Apple really is moving to the touch-first iOS, and they don't want to make Macs. They're going to hang on for a while till they can do everything that they do on the Mac on iOS. But at some point, they're going to dump it. Now,
you're saying this is a slow death, then?
This is a slow death.
This is
the equivalent of Apple's conference. After the Mac came out, they had a conference called Apple II Forever, in which they promised, we're going to make the Apple II forever.
Uh-huh. And do they still sell it?
No. A few years later, they killed it. It took them a while, but I think it's the beginning of the end of desktop operating system, macOS.
That blows my mind because I spend 90% of my workday on desktop OS X.
I agree. Most people who really use computers are going to use...
Yeah, I type a lot. If you give me an iPad Pro, I'm going to get fired in 3 days for not getting enough stuff done.
Well, that's the current iPad Pro. Apple's going to continue to work on it, and I think they do believe that they will get it to the point where you could use it instead of a computer.
Oddly enough, I think I would now bet more of my personal money on the Surface line than I would on the iPad
Pro. That's
Apple's
fear, right?
Well, I mean, it's fair because Microsoft merged the two OSs together
I think that
in
that's
a functional way.
That's what this press conference was about. This press briefing was about kids, don't worry. Don't leave us. Please don't leave us. Please don't leave us. And that's the problem they're facing is pros are rapidly choosing Windows. Anyway.
Or Linux machines.
Enough of that. I won't belabor that, but I'm excited. You're excited.
I'm excited.
Yeah. You know what I'm excited about? YouTube TV. I'm going to give you a demo at the end of the show.
Okay.
This is YouTube's new over-the-top service, $35 a month. It's only available in 5 cities in the U.S. for now because they've only negotiated the ability to broadcast or stream the local channels in those 5 markets. But I have it.
Oh, you do have it.
And I will show you. And if I were, let me put it this way. If I were a cable company in America today, I'd be worried. That's how good it is.
Do you think this will help the cord nevers, as they say? So people that didn't cut the cord but just never had it?
That's what I think it's aimed at. It's people your age and younger who just watch YouTube who don't. No, how old are you?
27.
Yeah. Your age and younger, you're right at the edge. Maybe 25 and younger. Because you watch TV.
No.
Do you have a cable subscription?
No.
Then it's aimed at you. It's aimed at millennials who never had a cable subscription. They're not cord cutters, but it's going to get. But they watch YouTube. This is YouTube's wedge under the tent.
And it's a long-term offering.
It's a very long wedge. What?
No, move on.
Speaking of which, so Comcast... says, oh, we're in deep trouble. Let's start a phone company.
Because everyone knows it's a very uncompetitive market. There's no players currently in the space.
So I actually called this several years ago when Comcast started to take their Wi-Fi access points and create the public Wi-Fi, the Xfinity Wi-Fi.
Yes.
And everybody who didn't disable this was suddenly supporting people all over the community with Wi-Fi.
How kind.
I said the next step here is they're building a phone network, and that's exactly what's happened. They're going to use Verizon for cell coverage where there's no Wi-Fi coverage, but you'll be using Xfinity Wi-Fi whenever you're in a metro. Because you walk down the street, in San Francisco,
there's
it's everywhere.
There's tons of Xfinity hotspots. Yeah.
So this is kind of the natural, I think, the natural extension. This is probably something they've planned for years. $65 a month, unlimited local and long-distance calling, unlimited internet. Be interesting.
Yeah. I still have my Verizon employee discount, though, so I actually don't take that away, please. So I won't be switching, but I do think it's a pretty cool idea. Do you think we'll see other major cable providers take a similar step? Or is this kind of an only Comcast offering?
It's taken Comcast years, right, to get this Xfinity network built up.
That's true.
So they're going to, if Cox or Charter or somebody else wants to do this, they're going to have to start now.
Yeah.
And it'll take them a while. I think Comcast has the lead in this. They saw this coming. Here's my problem. Verizon's fine, right? Verizon's connectivity is great.
Yeah, that's what I use.
But tell me your experience with Xfinity Wi-Fi, these open hotspots. Half the time I join it, there's no connectivity. It's like not working, right?
Yeah.
In fact, I got to the point where I turned it off in my phone. I have to forget it and say, don't join this, because otherwise it joins it.
And then it won't let go of it, even though it's not working. You can't do anything on your phone. Well,
imagine if that's your cell phone connectivity.
Oh, I'd cry.
Because you have no other choice.
I couldn't do my job.
Right.
Yeah, that would not
work
at all.
So we'll wait to see how that works out. Let's see, what other stories?
There's the Xbox news. Project Scorpio.
Are you a gamer?
So I just bought a PS4 this last month.
Oh, you blew it.
I know.
This is another example of Microsoft's releasing this. They released it to one group, Eurogamer.
Yeah, which is, yeah.
It was a little weird. This is very much like the Apple briefing, where they limited set. It's Eurogamer is, the parent company is Digital Foundry. They're very good at this stuff. And they've been, and they, in the past, they've been critical of Xbox, saying, it, you know, this is, doesn't do 4K very well, things like that. So I think it was a good choice to let a skeptical but highly technical group look at the Scorpio.
That's brave.
Yeah.
I like
that. That is brave. But it's also Microsoft saying, don't buy a PS4 because we're going to have this by Christmas, honest.
Sorry.
It's a little bit like what Apple did.
How much will the Scorpio cost? Because I was reading
they
the
didn't
specs.
Say.
It was
they?
Really impressive, but I can't imagine.
Six teraflops, 6 trillion floppy, I mean, floating point operations per second. Floppy floating point is a little harder to do. So that's very fast. 6 teraflops is very fast.
Oh, yeah.
However, I got an email from somebody who said, you know, really, it's considered that 8 is the minimum to do full 4K, 60 frame a second.
So it's still 2 teraflops short.
Well, we'll see. Digital Foundry didn't seem to think so. They were able to test some games running at 4K, 60 frames, and they said it worked pretty well. This is vapor cooled. This is a powerful machine.
So
it's got 12 gigs of DDR5.
What is vapor cooling? It sounds more like more vaporware.
No, that's the real deal.
Define that for me.
Most computers are like the old Volkswagen Bug. They're air-cooled, right? They got a fan blowing air. But on these modern GPUs and hot CPUs, you often need more. You've seen water-cooled or liquid-cooled.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Vapor-cooled is very similar. It's just it's like how your refrigerator works. It's basically a condenser system.
I always do look to my home appliances for notes on how to build the next-generation gaming console. It's really a really rich area to pull from.
But to compare it, Keith512 in the chat room is saying the new NVIDIA Titan XP, 12 teraflops.
That's...
So it is... But remember, it's a gaming console.
Yeah.
The real question is going to be, and I don't think Digital Foundry really fully answered this, is how many games will be 4K 60 FPS, and how many of these, games will be that all the time or just some of the time? And I think we won't really know that until we. The reason Microsoft did this now, Ford said they were able to do it, and in fact they said there was a lot of headroom as well. But maybe Ford says isn't the most challenging. I don't know. Anyway,
I'm going to buy one. I'm pretty sure.
Definitely going to buy one. I'm an Xbox One guy, though. I'm all in.
Oh,
on
you
the
were
Xbox.
Originally on the Xbox.
Oh yeah, I've been Xbox since day one.
Well, you make Frank Shaw really happy.
Yeah, Frank and I like this. Francis X. Shaw.
Indeed.
Does the X stand for Xavier? Because I think he is one of them X-Men types.
No comment.
All right. You know what? There was another story, and I really wanted to get Steve Gibson on to talk about this. Over the last month, there have been, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, 3 different exploits on LastPass discovered by Tavis Ormondy at Google. Steve Gibson is the host of Security Now. Hi, Steve. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. Great to be with you on
Appreciate
Saturday.
It. I know. Your Saturdays are precious, so I'm grateful that you're willing to be on with us. So I guess the bottom line question is, can we continue to trust LastPass? This is the password vault of choice. It's the one I use and love. I looked at other ones this month thinking maybe I'm ready to move. Should I?
No.
Thank you, Steve Gibson. And
that's
been
fantastic.
So why are you reassured that LastPass is not troubled?
I know this is counterintuitive, but the reason we're finding problems is that Tavis Ormondy is looking. And he's looking because it's the best password manager there is. He's not bothering to pound on any of the other ones. But the way security works is a product that has not been looked at carefully by a third party is unknown.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, all of the behavior of LastPass, the corporation, is to do the best job they can and then to respond within hours of any problems being found. So it's true that because an elite hacker has been really, really trying to find problems. I mean, we're at the point now where he has to shower on a Saturday with this on his mind in order to go, wait a minute, I think maybe. And then he goes and checks it out and finds the most obscure problems imaginable, which they then immediately fix.
You're talking about Tavis's tweet that he had an epiphany in the shower.
Yes.
And said, I suddenly figured out how I could get remote code execution in LastPass. I'm trying to find it.
We have it up on the screen.
Oh, there it is. How could get code execution on LastPass. And then, in fact, it had found it. I don't know how he thought of it in the shower, but I get my best thoughts in the shower as well.
I bet he's a lot of fun at dinner parties. That's the guy you want to bring over for three courses and dessert.
Well, we're grateful to Tavis because he is, at this point, I would say he's the premier guy to find code flaws.
Yes. Now, okay, so the problem is it is inherently risky to use any password manager that is browser-based because browsers are the modern attack surface. I mean, they are what they're trying to do is inherently difficult.
And so, it's a single point, not a failure, but a single point of access for a hacker, right? If I got your password database, bada bing, bada boom, it's
everywhere
all
you
over.
Have password saved, you're vulnerable. Right. Okay.
And the nature of what a password manager must do is it must understand, it must at least, if only briefly, decrypt an encrypted blob in order to extract a username and password in order to fill it in to a browser's field. So there's no way around that. I would argue if you're okay with a password manager in a browser, there is no reason not to trust LastPass over over any other password manager that Tavis hasn't showered under.
So just to make that simpler, essentially because it had the most scrutiny attached to it, even though there were minor exploits found or potential vulnerabilities found, because they've been erased, we know
but
there's probably lower areas of attack.
It isn't an open source product. So
true.
Tavis is not looking at the source code. He's figuring it out in his head, right?
No, it is open source.
Oh, it is.
Because it's JavaScript.
It's not obfuscated JavaScript. He can read the JavaScript code.
Okay. Yes. And
now that only addresses the browser extension. If you're using... is that right?
Well, it addresses the entire behavior because what he found was some behavior of LastPass's script that was being injected into the page.
Now, but let me ask you this, Steve. What if, and this is what I did. On the Macintosh, I'm very happy, there's a LastPass app. And I can use it, I can log into it, I can copy and paste passwords, and at no point is the extension on my browser, Firefox or Chrome or Safari. I took it off of all of those. There isn't, unfortunately, on Linux or Windows. So in that case, what I have to do is log into LastPass in my browser. And I can do that. LastPass allows you to log in and access your store that way on its servers. Is that more secure to do it that way, or is it have some of the potential risks?
It's probably more secure because it's transient. But the better solution. So if you want the convenience of an integrated password manager, I use LastPass, and I would recommend it over any other. Browser integrated solution.
And you use the browser extension. You haven't taken out the browser.
Yeah, I'm not worried about this at all.
Okay.
Oh,
I mean,
wow. Okay.
No, I mean not at all. So, but I would understand if someone is worried. Then what you want to do is use a standalone password manager and take the responsibility yourself. For example, like KeePass is a great one. KeePass.
That's open source. Your blob is on your hard drive. If you want to propagate it to your mobile device or another computer, it's up to you to figure out how to do that, whether with Dropbox or some other method.
What do I tell my parents to do?
LastPass.
Use LastPass. Okay. Yes. I'm still using it. I don't have any concern at all because, I mean, Tavis has been looking at this thing now for a month. And he found all of the obvious problems. And, I mean, and there have been problems in the past. What we need is for them to respond fast. Notice that not a single, as far as we know, not a single instance of anyone's data being compromised from using LastPass has ever been found. So, you know, you can't say that about pretty much anything else. So Tavis finds problems, reports it to them. Then they fix it immediately, and we all move forward. That makes it better than any other, any competing browser integrated solution that no one has tried to attack. And so I have more confidence than less as a consequence of the fact that it is now – I mean, this may be the last problem he'll ever be able to find, because he's like at his wit's end. He's having to shower in order to find a problem.
And good news, hackers don't shower as much as Tavis does.
I've been in those rooms. It does not smell fantastic.
And the other thing to point out to your parents, and to point out to you, you at home should point out to your loved ones, is it's far better for them to use LastPass, even if it had flaws, because – it prevents them from using the same password over and over. It gives them good, strong passwords. It memorizes them so they don't have to. It encourages safer behavior.
Digital hygiene, effectively.
Yeah, digital hygiene. So that probably is much more important, frankly, than whether there's some weird exploit in JavaScript.
Well, yes. And now that we're such mobile users, the cloud synchronization of the passwords you use on your desktop and then the ones you want to be able to use on your phone, that's crucial now.
Right.
So not to have that means, as you said, you are responsible for moving the encrypted blob between devices. And that gets tiresome really quickly.
Yeah. And if you're worried, I guess don't use the browser plugin. Use the binary app where you can. There is actually a LastPass Pocket version for Linux, which I wasn't aware of.
Fantastic.
So I'll download that. They're telling me the Windows Store has a LastPass application. Macintosh does.
So there's no real excuse to not be.
That would be safer, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because then you don't have to worry about JavaScript at all.
Yes. And the problem is that, it is difficult to protect code in the browser. They've tried to implement protection mechanisms. And in fact, what Tavis found was really an edge case where the one of the coding techniques that the LastPass guys used happened to have an interaction with the page that never occurred to them but did occur to Tavis. And the consequence was that there was a theoretical – notice, even then, there wasn't an actual exploit. It was just, he thought there was a way – and they're not ever going to take his advice for granted. They immediately jumped on it and fixed it. This occurred on a Saturday. It was fixed by the end of the weekend.
Yeah.
And there were more than 3,000 instances in their code where they had done something which Tavis found could be abused, and they removed them all.
Wow.
And we already had updates before anyone knew about what the details were.
And that's really awesome. That's the most you can expect. And this really is a testament to Tavis. When he found the bug in Cloudflare, they responded in 47 minutes. When Tavis Ormandy says there's a problem, people sit up and take notice, and they act quickly.
Yeah, he's barely dry by the time this thing sticks.
He's like got a towel on. He's typing with one hand. Like, I got to tell everyone on Twitter.
Steve joins us every Tuesday for Security Now, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. This week on Security Now, you're going to respond to the recent bill that was passed and signed into law on Monday by President Trump, allowing internet service providers to sell your browsing history and anything they know about you to marketers. You're going to address what we can do to protect ourselves.
Right. The podcast is titled Proactive Privacy.
Okay.
And the idea is to sort of step back and look at all of the terrain of privacy exploitation from the technical side. That is, what the browser does to leak your information, what an ISP could see, what an endpoint company like Facebook or Google can see, what does it mean to like clean your cookies or use incognito mode, how does a VPN protect you, and how does it still not protect you. So we're going to take a comprehensive look at the whole privacy exploitation technology and what measures you users can take in order to, if they, to the degree they're concerned. I'm not suggesting everyone has to be, but I know a lot of people are. So, how can we empower ourselves with the technology we have to counter the technology being used to try to track us and profile us on the internet?
As always, we're very lucky to have both Tavis Ormandy and Steve Gibson. Tavis to find the bug, Steve to explain him. Thank you, Steve.
Talk to you Tuesday, Leo.
GRC.com is Steve's home on the internet, and a great place to go if you for a lot of reasons. He's got a lot of stuff on there.
I feel like I want to just hear him talk about security like an hour each week so I get less dumb.
That's called listening to our show on Tuesday. Would you
please? I was trying to recommend. This is what happens when you try to be useful.
It's 2 hours.
This is what happens.
It's 2 hours. Yeah.
Steve. I only have one.
Please,
anyways.
Make the time. Hey, if you got a little time to read, I just want to give a plug to our friend Daniel Suarez. We're going to interview him on Triangulation. His new book just came out. Have you read any of his books?
I have not.
Oh, you are. I'm so jealous. Start with Daemon, Daemon, and then Freedom. I think Freedom 2, right? Something like that.
Freedom TM,
that's right. Daniel Suarez and his new one, Change Agent, just came out. John has read it, and I haven't read it yet. It's good, though, right? You liked it? Can't wait. Just came out in hardcover. I just wanted to give a plug because I love Daniel. Coming up in just a little bit, Miriam's going to review the LG G6. It is not your own private jet. It is, in fact, the new smartphone from LG. But first, a word from our sponsor. I am so happy to have WordPress as a sponsor. I have been a WordPress user forever, and I'm just setting up my new WordPress blog at leolaporte.blog. I have to say, now this is just a simple template, but WordPress gives you literally dozens, maybe hundreds of templates to choose from, all kinds of looks. It's no wonder that WordPress powers 27% of the internet. Can you believe that? Even big sites are powered by WordPress. I am a huge fan of WordPress. If you don't have experience building a website, don't worry. WordPress can easily guide you through the process with their themes. You pick a template, you make it your own, you get built in all the features you want, like search engine optimization, social sharing. They've got a publicized feature that automatically shares posts to social media networks. You can, of course, as I did for years, run WordPress on your own server. But if you let them do it at wordpress.com/NSS, they keep it up to date. They patch it all. They offer a huge variety of plugins. They have a huge variety of people who can help you make your WordPress site even better. You're part of a community. That's what's also great about wordpress.com. It drives traffic to your website. And, of course, with 24/7 support, you'll never have questions you can't get an answer to. Get back to getting stuff done. Get your website up and running. I love WordPress. I've been a WordPress user practically since they launched. I think it was a beta user when Matt Mullenweg first wrote the software way back when. Yeah.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah. I love WordPress. And I'm just really thrilled to have him on the show. WordPress.com/NSS. Find out why 27% of the net runs on WordPress. And we're going to get you 15% off when you use the offer code podcast at checkout. WordPress.com/NSS. That's a good deal.
I've done 100% of my professional writing online on WordPress. NextWeb, TechCrunch, TechCrunch uses it. And Crunchbase.
Yep.
Yeah. Everywhere.
They make a big deal. You know, Vox makes a big deal. We make custom CMS.
How'd that work out for Gawker?
Right. You don't need it. You got WordPress. It's the ultimate content management system.
And I will say, not to be too polite to the advertiser, but like there are so many plugins out there.
Oh, yeah,
that
you can do anything.
You can fix a lot of stuff pretty easily.
Including, by the way, if you want a podcast, it's so easy. There's podcast like PodPress. There's some great podcasting plugins that make it just perfect for that. Anyway, It's all there. WordPress.com/NSS. Miriam Jouar was here on Tuesday on our All About Android show. She's had for some time LG's newest Android phone, the G6. I'm really intrigued by it because, like the new S8, it's long. You know, they make it because they want to be able to one-handed operation, so they made it, what is it, 16 by 8? Almost, it's almost a 2-to-1
aspect
ratio.
That'll be 16 by 7?
Yeah, well.
It is. She says it in the studio.
Yeah, well, we'll find out because she's got the review. Miriam Jouar, take a look.
All right, let's talk about the G6 here. So this is a white one, which doesn't exist in the U.S., but it's a U.S. model.
Really pretty.
This is a gorgeous phone. And just as a point of reference, I have my Pixel here in a case. 5.5 inch display here on the Pixel versus 5.7. As you can see, this 2.1 aspect ratio display is taking up about 83% of the front of the phone. And I think this is where we're going. The Galaxy S8 is doing the same. To me, this is the most exciting part about this phone is the display. It's gorgeous. It's IPS. Mm-hmm. Get this, 2880 by 1440. Mm-hmm. It's exactly 2-to-1 aspect ratio. And then, you know, in the back, you've got the signature dual camera and fingerprint reader. So there's a wide angle and a regular. And this year, they're both 13 megapixel.
They're so good, by the way.
They're so good.
They're so good.
Almost I would say in some cases better, but most of the time almost as good as a Pixel. So this is actually from the exact same vantage point in San Francisco. So this is the normal view, right? This is what you would normally see. And this one here is the wide angle of the same shot.
Oh, wow. That's a big difference.
The wide angle really makes a big difference.
When you look at that Prius on the left, right? Between this where it's off in the distance and there, it's right on the corner.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
There are small other differences. Last year's wide angle on the V20 and the G5 was 8 megapixel. Now it's higher, it's 13. But they lost the OIS. So they have OIS on the normal camera, but on the wide angle last year they had OIS. Now they removed that. But you know what?
I wonder if that matters.
No, because in low light it does pretty well.
Yeah.
Because there's no autofocus on the wide angle. There never was.
Exactly.
So it's not really a big deal. Usually you're not looking at the kind of detail where it's going to be really blurry. And, you know, I didn't find it to be an issue. But anyway, display's great. Camera's great. The build and materials. It's the first time, and I'm really excited about this because I've been saying they should do this for a while now. It's the first time that LG has brought us a phone made out of metal and glass. It is, you know, machined and properly done. Last year's G5, as we know, was painted metal. I don't know why they were painting it. It looked like a car paint. It was really high quality. But they claimed metal, but it didn't feel like metal. It felt like plastic. It was kind of cheap. And the modular thing just...
Yeah, it was hollow on the inside. That's exactly.
It
felt weird.
So anyway, this is beautifully made. Great, great screen and camera. Great performance. It's Snapdragon 821, 4 gigs of RAM. One of the kind of downsides is that at least the US model only exists with 32 gigs.
Yeah.
It does have micro SD up to 256 gigs. But some versions in Asia have 64 gigs on this phone. And... also, the U.S. version is the only one with wireless charging. So maybe we get a little less storage, but we get wireless charging, which is kind of interesting. IP68, so water dust proof. USB Type-C. Headphone jack is not gone, which is wonderful.
Yay.
I mean, really, there's very little to complain. It's running Android 7.0 maybe. I think it still needs 7.1.
I think it's 7.0, yeah.
So, I mean, overall, there's really very little to complain about with this phone. I loved it. And I think, you know, you look at the spec sheet and you're like, this is such a last year's phone, you know, Snapdragon 821, right. 4 gigs of RAM, 30 gigs of storage. But then you start using it and that great display and the build quality and the camera and the performance, and it just falls together as like something that, as I wrote in my review, is greater than the sum of its parts. And that's why I think if you're looking at buying a new phone this year, you know, certainly the Galaxy S8 is something you're going to look at. But consider this phone, because in terms of software, it's very minimal, the skinning. It's really fast. And it's $100 cheaper. It's $650 right out of the box, no matter what carrier you're on. I think the Verizon's $20 more, but whatever.
And they all come with a free Google Home April 30th.
So you get free Google Home. So this, I think, is the G phone you want. If you're going to buy one, if this is a year for you to buy a G phone, buy this one. I'd say would definitely skip the G5, even if you're getting a good deal on it, because this just, you know, forget about it after this guy.
Miriam Joar with Florence Ion, Jason Howell and Ron Amadio on All About Android on Tuesday. I don't care. In 2 weeks, I will have, and I'll have it on this show,
yes,
Samsung Galaxy 8 Plus, which is the Mondo phone.
It's the tablet-sized thing.
No, yes. But it isn't. That's the point. It's just as you saw with that G6, without the bezels,
yes,
you can have a big screen in a phone that's actually about the same size as the iPhone 7 Plus.
Which, is this size.
Yeah. So that's not what you
would
call that
huge. This is the
outer
limit, though. This is
that's the outer limit.
Yeah, this is, my hand is not going to be bigger than
this. I agree, but I love the idea of a 6.2-inch screen on something that size.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
And Apple will be doing that later this year, too, I predict. In fact, this is it. The future is bezel-free.
Bezel-free. Bezel-less.
Smaller bezel.
Sans
bezel-less. Sans bezel.
Free the bezel.
You got lots of slogans in you.
Sorry.
Alex Wilhelm. You also got a motorized skateboard from Inboard. And joining us now from Inboard Technology, CEO and co-founder, Ryan Evans. He's the one who sent us this Inboard M1 electric skateboard. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, what's going on, Leo? It's great to be here.
You're a skater, I take it.
I grew up a fan of all action sports.
Okay. And you started a skateboard company. Tell me the genesis of this, which is, I think, fascinating.
Yeah, so, you know, really, you know, honestly, when I was in university watching the original Screensavers in 2003, and I just need to pause here for a second, Leo, and say, you haven't aged at all. You're ageless.
That's because I don't ride skateboards. Thank you. That's very nice of you, Ryan. Wow, 2003. Those were the good old days.
Yeah,
so you were in college.
I, I would skate downhill to class, but I always had to walk back uphill.
What a pain.
And it was a pain in the butt. And so, you know, we saw Segways come out, and Segways were really cool and they were exciting. But, you know, Dean Kamen was talking about Segway parking lots and Segway charging stations. And, you know, you couldn't fit a Segway in an elevator. It didn't fit with society as it is today. And so, you know, we kind of put that on the shelf for, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years. And then me and my co-founder and I, who were both action sports athletes, we loved action sports, but we loved technology like drones and IoT sensors. And we loved taking these new tech features and applying them to the sports we love. So we were flying drones and filming surfing, filming kiteboarding, filming skateboarding. And then it was one day where he was like, what if we just took one of these drone motors and we put it on the actual skateboard?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, so this is a drone motor. Okay, that makes a lot. It's a little noisy, but it's kind of cool.
Well, so we started out making drone motors, and what we found was that they didn't work. I mean, a drone motor is designed to create, you know, quite a lot of, you know, high rotational speed, but not the torque that you need to move 170% up a hill.
That makes sense.
And so this is when we took a step back and we looked at, you know, kind of the emerging, you know, landscape of transportation, autonomous vehicles, and really the huge opportunity for, you know, in 5 to 10 years with autonomous vehicles taking over the roads to reclaim our public space and to create more bike lanes, more public space, more outdoor dining, or more outdoor restaurants, and using these new bike lanes, using rideable technology. So whether it's a electric bike or electric skateboard or an electric scooter. So we saw a huge market opportunity. So he and I, we hung up the kiteboarding and the surfing gear for a little bit, and we designed a fully inline motor controller, electronic firmware, battery pack, and motor.
So is this the device you pitched on Shark Tank?
That is, yeah. That's the one from Shark Tank.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were out there.
Did they give you money, or you just decided, screw them, I'm going to make it anyway?
We actually took a deal with Lori Grenier and Kevin O'Leary. Yeah,
nice.
Absolutely.
So they loved the idea.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I want to get Kevin O'Leary on a skateboard. That would be fantastic. You just push him down a hill and see what happens.
I don't think that's going to happen.
It would be
Kevin jumped up and got on the board right
did he?
As he walked out. Yeah, he was the first person to get up.
Nice.
It was shocking. But,
so
you know,
this is a board that does draw people. We actually had it in the offices, and everybody, we have video of it, everybody rode the M1. They loved this skateboard. It wasn't hard to learn. It's a long board, right? It's not designed to be doing tricks or anything. It's too heavy. It's a long board. It's for getting around.
Yeah, we wanted to make something that was big enough, you know, long enough and wide enough that anyone could get on it and go for their first time. But at the same time, you want to make something that's, you know, aspirational, that, you know, somebody who grew up skateboarding can get on and they can still have fun with. So
you're not going to do a kickflip, though, because, I mean, it's, you know, you got batteries in there.
Probably not. But we do work with team riders for testing and
really?
Product development. Yeah. One of the top downhill longboarders in the world, a gentleman named Liam Morgan.
Nice.
He's taking that thing to 55 miles an hour downhill in Berkeley.
55 miles an
hour slides. Yeah.
That sounds absolutely. I was going like 7 miles an hour in the parking lot, and I was proud I wasn't falling over.
Show us the controller. So you don't. The way you the accelerator is this little hand controller.
Yes. Yeah. There we go.
It's called the Reflex Remote. It's got that forward-facing tail, so that once you're holding it, you honestly don't even have to worry about dropping it, because the way it holds your fingers, it allows you to kind of open and adjust your hand.
It's
and you don't
very
have to
natural.
Worry as much
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just basically push to go. There's no what's that switch for?
So this is the dead switch. You push this, and then it'll go forwards and backwards. But it won't do it if you don't push this. And
so, yeah.
This is how you change speed.
If you fall off or whatever, you're not going to worry about that.
And there you go. Now we're going to go fast. So if I get on
Yikes.
It now, I'll probably die. But
Yikes.
It's okay.
So that was one of our big things, making it so that really anyone could get into it. 75% of our customers, Leo, are not skateboarders.
Really?
They're people who, a lot of people wanted to get into skateboarding. They thought it was cool. But Goodness. The problem is kick pushing. What do I do if I get out of control?
Josh is the king of goofy foot. I'm glad to see him on that thing. He's not. If Josh can ride it, there's Carly on it. We had everybody riding it.
You know, people feel like a superhero because they think it's a huge challenge, and they pick it up really quickly.
Jason. Nice.
Our VP of marketing puts it really, he's got a great analogy. If you can get on the BART or a subway or a train, and you don't want to hold on to the gross handrails, and you just lean forward and lean back when it is about to accelerate and brake, that's basically riding the board.
Okay. And you can, by the way, take this on the subway. You can even take it on an airplane, right? It's one of the few that are approved for flying.
We are, yes, 100% airline compliant, so you can take it with you, fly internationally. You can bring up to 2 extra batteries. And that's one of the biggest things, Leo, is you can go 7 to 10 miles on one charge. But if you have another battery, you can just swap it in 10 seconds, and you can go another 7 to 10 miles.
That's awesome.
7 to 10 miles is a long distance.
Is that how do hills impact battery life? I live in San Francisco and it's pretty steep. So in that environment, how far can I go?
You know, it's interesting. Like pavement and the quality of the pavement, so smooth pavement over rough pavement impacts the rider weight, and then the terrain. And then one of the last things, Alex, little tricks like if you push to get going, it actually increases the efficiency and the range of the board massively by about another mile.
So if you were in your example, if you're going downhill to class, you don't use the engine and the motor at all, but you use it going uphill, to survive.
Well, when you go downhill, Leo, you do the regenerative brake.
Oh, it has regenerative braking. Oh, nice.
In fact, we're the only company in the space that's not only done regen braking, but we do dynamic braking.
So I know about regen braking from my Tesla. That means when it charges the battery when you're using it to slow down. In effect,
right. It captures that energy.
What's the other one?
So dynamic braking is basically taking regen, which charges the battery. Yeah. But if your battery's full, you have no brakes.
Ooh.
that's a problem.
Yeah.
So we have a...
That we realized that, you know, when you're working with a mass market, you can't tell them, oh, yeah, just don't go downhill on a full battery. They don't do that. So we had the foresight to put actually a flex circuit integrated underneath the graphic of the board to act as a resistor. So when you're going downhill, it charges the battery up until the battery's full, and then it transfers that energy into a flex circuit and gets rid of it through basically heat dissipation.
Nice.
Yes.
So I have a question about torque. So earlier before the show, we were using the
Alex rode this before the show. Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to push my Alex Gumbel here in an office chair, and it couldn't quite get started. So I'm curious, will we eventually see this sort of skateboard with more torque?
You don't want that kind of torque. You'd go flying in the air.
I want to cause more chaos, Leo. Come on.
So the interesting thing with the hub motor application is that you have 100% control over the customization, the feel of the product through the firmware. So you're actually able to create essentially different gears. So when we launched the product and started shipping in September last year, it had about 20% less torque than it does now. And we've got one new firmware update coming that's going to increase the torque by about another 20%. That's not a hardware change. That's just us writing more and more efficient firmware.
Oh, interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the great thing is you can buy it today, and we will continually make the product better. And it's all updatable using the inboard mobile app on the iOS.
This was a Kickstarter. How much did you raise on Kickstarter for this thing?
We raised just under $500,000. It was $421,000.
Nice. Congratulations.
Days, we fulfilled all of our Kickstarter, and we're in Best Buy in Mountain View now, and we're shipping to retailers in the U.S. and internationally.
Alex was pointing out it's a little hard to steer. It's not as easy to steer as a traditional non-electric skateboard.
Thanks for bringing that up, Leo. So one thing we do when we send out demos is we keep the trucks, which are the axles on the board, really tight.
Ah.
So that's high speed. If you wanted to make it very maneuverable, you just take the little tool that comes with it and do half a turn, and it makes it much more turns. So you can make it like a Mack truck or like a Porsche Carrera.
So that's what the trucks are real tight. If we loosen the trucks a little bit, you'd be able to steer it as you would a traditional skateboard.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, you can turn off his mic. It's way too much wind noise as he goes. He goes down the hall. It sounds like he's in a wind tunnel. That's amazing. How much is the M1?
So again, we're selling right now in retail. It's $1,399, and that comes with the travel bag and the battery pack and the remote and the charger.
And an extra battery is how much?
Right now, it's $249.
This is awesome. You show us where the battery. It goes in the top here. I see a little port on the. On the top there, you just open that up and put the battery in there.
Yeah, it takes about 2 seconds or half a second to twist it open, and
pop it open. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so we've actually done a little video where the guy changed the battery while he was riding. So we don't recommend
not
that.
Recommended.
Make sure to step off the board. You're in safe conditions, but that for us was huge. We realized that at CES, everyone's waiting in line for Ubers for 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm at Caesar's Palace, and I'm back, and I'm charging my MacBook Pro from the USB adapter that we're making for the battery.
How cool is that?
So it really lives with you in this new kind of digital world that we live in. For any millennial living in an urban area, this is way better than paying for an extra car spot or having to carry an electric bike up 4 flights of stairs.
Are they standard wheels and trucks? Could I change the wheels and trucks to my...
So we try to use everything from the existing skateboard industry. So the front and back trucks are traditional skate trucks.
Good.
The front wheels are normal skate wheels. The backs are obviously custom for us.
They have to be because they got a driver in those, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And...
But Leo, while you're on the point, actually, everything's user serviceable. You can see those little clips right there by the rear truck. If you had an issue with the motor, God forbid, you don't have to send the product back to us. We can just send you a new motor, and you undo that little plug on the side, and you can swap it out yourself.
I love it. It's got front lights and back lights for safety at night. This is a really cool device. The M1 electric skateboard. It's from Inboard Technologies. And what's the website if people want to order it?
It's inboardtechnology.com.
Love it. Well, I'm glad, Ryan, to have a former Screensavers fan be on the new Screensavers.
I'm thrilled to be here. I honestly, I know all my college friends are jealous that I'm the one who beat them here.
That's super cool. Ryan, congratulations on your success. And,
thanks. A quick shout out to Brad Long, Roman Rafaz, and Dave Evans, because they were all sitting next to me on the couch in college while we watched this.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Well, if had I known, I would have worn a kilt for you. It's great to meet you, Ryan. Ryan Evans is a co-founder and CEO of Inboard Technology. This looks really odd. My son's a skater, and I know he would love to around see you Boulder to get around. This would be so useful. Like a lot of hills.
Well, that would be fantastic. It's
It'd
flat,
really be
too.
Useful. Yeah, it's flat, but there's hills too. So you go up on College Hill and stuff. His house is up on the hill. This
we
not
can
a big
get him
hill.
On our college ambassador program.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be in touch. I'll be in touch.
Yes.
He'd be a good ambassador for you. He drives that around. Everybody'd want one. Thank you so much. We appreciate. Unlike this guy, Alex here.
I knew that was coming.
Whatever Alex is writing, I don't want it.
I mean, you're
actually,
not wrong.
I was impressed.
Hurts.
No, I was impressed. No, it was really impressed. How fast were you going down that hall?
It
was like wind.
I had to stop because the doors all hit it.
I hate those doors.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
Really appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break while Nathan Olivares-Giles takes over to demonstrate. We're all Sonos fans here. Are you a Sonos fan?
My apartment's too small.
Yeah.
To make it that useful.
You know, it's funny. I gave my son one Sonos speaker. That's all he has. But I said it's a starter set. You know, he doesn't have a house. He's got a room, right?
Yeah.
But it's a starter set, and you can slowly expand it over time. Well, they've added, for the first time in I think a couple of years, they've added a new speaker. They call it the Playbase. We gave it to Nate OG to take a look.
These days, the picture on TVs is better than ever, the prices are lower than ever, and they're incredibly thin. But one area where every new TV suffers is audio. These thin speakers, well, they just sound tinny and flat and bad. The new Sonos Playbase is a solution for that problem, although it's not a cheap one. The Playbase is a $700 speaker unit that will fill just about any room in your home with fantastic sound. It's equally as good with TV shows, movies, and sports, and it also rocks when it comes to video games and music, too. No matter what you're listening to, the soundstage is wide and detailed. There's also a wowing amount of bass that sounds natural thanks to a built-in subwoofer. One gripe, at high volumes, the treble does get a little rough. Now, Sonos does already sell a $700 speaker bar called the Play Bar, that is also built specifically for TVs. But while the Play Bar and the Play Bass are the same price, and they're built for the same function, they're really made for different use cases. The Play Bass is a flat TV stand. If you have a TV with a pedestal base, sitting on some furniture, then the Play Bass will make sense in your setup. If you have a TV with a clawfoot stand, then the Play Bass's 2.3-inch height might be too tall to slide underneath. The Play Bar is best suited for wall-mounted TVs, since it could wind up blocking your view if your screen isn't higher than its 3.35-inch height. With the Play Bar, I was also left wishing there was a bit more bass. The only option to add that into the mix is to buy the Sonos $700 sub. If you had two Sonos Play One speakers at a price of $200 each, you can create a 5.1 surround sound system. By that point, you'll have spent $1,800 in total. There are other cheaper surround sound options, but none I've seen and used are as easy to set up as a Sonos system. Every speaker requires a power cable and a Wi-Fi connection. The Play Bass and the Play Bar required one more cord, an optical cable that plugs into your TV. That's it. Everything can be set up in minutes, and Sonos's TruePlay system uses your phone's microphone to tune the speakers to the size of your room. While simplicity is one of the things I love most about Sonos speakers, I am bummed to see that there's no support for DTS or 7.1 surround sound. There's also no HDMI ports, no Bluetooth, and no voice control. Still, if you're looking for an all-in-one device that will get great sound into your living room, the Playbase is really the only speaker you need. I'm Nathan Olivares-Giles, and you can catch me on Saturdays on the new Screensavers, and you can follow me on Twitter at NateOG.
Nate will be here next week, actually, hosting the show. So we have, and when I see the price, we have the full Sonos surround system, but we bought it, as many people do with Sonos, one at a time, so you don't really
notice.
You don't really
much.
Notice that, oh my God, that thing cost $1,800. This is the original soundbar, which they still sell, and we have this, but I would much rather have the base. The idea of the base is it's essentially the same, but you can put your TV on it. The other thing to point out is this is more than just a surround sound system. Sonos is all about streaming music, so it supports all the streaming music services.
Yes.
It has a great interface app, and someday they say it'll work with the Amazon Echo, which would really be nice to be able to see.
This one's heavier.
Yeah,
I think these are bulky, serious things you don't want to move around.
Yeah,
much.
And you really do, if you want full sound, need a sub. And if you want surround sound, need the additional play one.
So speakers. Really, you need to drop $1,800 to get it right.
No, you could drop less.
Slowly. Drip, drip,
but
drip.
That's what happens. It
no
drips
more 401k.
Out. Yeah, I know. It's kind of the nature of the Sonos system. I almost feel like Sonos is being eclipsed. That now with Chromecast Audio.
Interesting.
I really feel like Sonos feels like that too. You know, they replaced their founder, CEO, and they're working really hard to support voice systems, and that's why it's being eclipsed. Because I can use my Echo to listen to music, connect it to better speakers, my Dots.
Because the Echo speakers are actually awful.
And it turns out, right? Well, you don't want to use
they're
the Echo
abysmal
speakers, unless you don't care so much about sound if it's just spoken word. But I think that more and more people want that voice command. It's just easier than getting out an app and doing remote control. And that's they're challenged. They got to get going if they're going to compete. I love the Sonos products.
Well, once
the
you put Siri or Alexa into this, then it can spy on you, which is fantastic. So this is the NSA's
Can't wait.
Unit.
There is a microphone in these units, but it's for that sound testing.
That's what they tell you.
That true sound. Yeah, well, maybe, yeah. And these are heavy. They got big, you know, you want a speaker to be heavy because it's got big magnets in it. Are you ready for a call for help?
I'm actually excited about this one.
You know the answer.
I will stand back and
watch. It's time for a call.
I want to take that back.
For help. On the line from Santa Barbara, one of the most beautiful places in the world, Mike. Hey, Mike.
I'll tell you what. I've got a question, guys. You know, I have a tendency to download all the latest and coolest iPhone apps, the email apps.
I do. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I'll bet. So check it out. This is what happens. So what I do is I download them and I put all my settings in there, whether they're Hotmail or Gmail or whatever it happens to be. And I've probably done a dozen of them over the last 5 years. So because I already put a piece of tape over my camera anyway and I'm paranoid, I have a question for you. What happens? Because, you know, I use them and then I get bored with them and I hit the X and I just make them go away, right?
Yeah.
So my question is, are those apps, because I don't use them, are they still pinging my servers and grabbing my email and reading them and, you know, tossing them out, or is it delaying my email?
No, you don't have to worry at all. Okay. So the way an email app works, and then I'm going to ask you which ones you like, because I'm always looking for what the best one is.
Top five.
Yeah.
When you install
an app, let's say it's Spark or Outlook, you know, Apple has its own mail app on the iPhone, but you try one of these other apps, you give it the settings. First of all, unless it's a malicious app, and Apple does not let malicious apps in the App Store, it's not communicating your login settings for your email server back to the home office. It's keeping it locally on the iPhone. When it downloads mail, it's keeping it not only local in the iPhone, but in a data store that's only accessible to that app. That's one of the things the iPhone does very well. It isolates apps from other apps. When you delete the app, it deletes all the settings, and it should, if it's deleted properly, delete its data as well. So you're basically back to ground zero. The app does not continue to communicate with the server. The owners of the app, the creators of the app, do not have access to your email. They never did, nor do they have access to your email credentials. So the answer is it's completely safe to try a variety of email apps on the iPhone. There may be a different answer with other apps on computers and so forth. But on the iPhone, try them all. It's completely harmless. You use space, because each new app you use has its own data store. It's going to download the same email you downloaded before, so it will use up space. But that space should, in normal use, be released when you delete the app.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my favorite. It's Outlook.
Yeah.
The iPhone.
You know why? I'll tell you why. It's not the same Outlook for Windows, which
not
is horrible.
Oh, you mean the desktop
Absolutely.
Disaster with
the
10,000 buttons.
The desktop disaster. Yeah. Microsoft bought a really nice, I thought, email package called a Complete.
Mm-hmm.
And a Complete is basically what you're getting when you use Outlook on an iPhone or an iPad. I think it's very nice. It has the slide to, you know, save or to flag. It was always one of the nicest email apps. A lot of them are very similar now. Spark, same thing. But yeah, Outlook, I think Outlook is an excellent iOS app. You know, Microsoft, it's very interesting. Microsoft's being very aggressive about getting on the iPad.
I think when they realized they weren't going to get much market share on the device side of the mobile space, they decided to build top quality applications to federate across right. other people's platforms.
Once they gave up on Windows Phone, in other
words. RIP Windows Phone.
Yeah. I agree. I think Outlook is absolutely one of the premier apps.
And I actually downloaded Hop. Per Megan.
Yeah, did you? So you watch iOS like Today, it. Our iOS show.
It's my, yeah. No offense, guys, but it is my favorite.
I'm not offended.
Hey,
I'm
never
my...
on that show. Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
you
I commute come on every it. Day. I commute every day, and, you know, it's recorded on Tuesdays or Mondays. I watch it or listen to it on Tuesdays on nice. The way to work, and it's one of my most favorite ones. But
I thought we were out of luck when Sarah left because she was so great. And then along comes Megan, and it's just so much fun to do it with
Well,
Megan.
She was really nice. She actually returned my email within minutes. Nice. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, Megan, Hop was interesting. I was on the beta program for Hop. The idea was treat email like messaging. Mm-hmm. So it's right. kind of a real-time email system. It didn't work for me, but I get way too much email. My problem is not the same as probably many people's problem, although it may be the same as yours, Alex.
It gets a little rough.
I get hundreds, maybe thousands of messages a day. What I need is a power tool that sorts and handles this email so I don't have to read it all.
That's what an intern right. is for.
Yeah.
For.
Yeah.
For a while, right, actually, right, I did. Right. I hired a person to do my email, but that didn't work out too well.
Well, tell Megan thank you. I sure appreciate
it. Hey, it's really nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. All I right. appreciate you having me on your show.
Hop is fun. It's very interesting.
Hop is
it's a different way of looking at email. Next week, as I mentioned, oh, by the way, I want to correct myself. I don't know why I said Ron Amadio on All About Android. It's Ron Richards. I got the Rons confused. He was just a little picture on a screen. I could have, you know, I might have. I don't know, I'm getting old. Next week, Nathan will be back. Nathan OG will be our co-host. If you want Nathan or me to answer your tech questions, here's exactly what you must do now.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Did you ever watch the old tech TV? You're probably too young.
I saw clips of it because yeah. I was a Dignation fan, and they talked about
okay.
tech TV. Yeah, yeah. So
you were a Kevin Rose, Alex Albrecht fan.
Exactly. That got me on the podcast actually originally. I would
nice.
Watch it every single week on Zune desktop.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Well, so one of the things, you know, I loved tech TV. The original screensavers was on tech TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for anybody who worked at tech TV, which, by the way, next year will celebrate the 20th anniversary of the launch of tech TV. It's that old. You were 7 years old when we started. But we all have a lot of people working with us who worked at Tech TV. Jerry worked at Tech TV. Karsten worked at Tech TV. In a little bit, we're going to talk to you. Do you remember Russ? Did you work with him? Russ Pitts, who was one of our web producers at Tech TV, was a screensavers web producer, as I remember, and left in a very amazing puff of smoke when he left Tech TV. He wrote one of those emails, the company-wide emails.
Oh, was it kind of a blazing glory,
blaze
guns
of glory
moment? Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to ask him about that because, well, it's profane. But I am going to ask him about a new project he's working on in just a second, which is really cool. So another Screensavers alum will join us. Before that happens, though, let me tell you a little bit about one of my favorite companies. If you're going to buy a house or you're going to refi, now would be a good time to refi because the interest rates, we already know, are starting to go up, right? There are a couple of things you're going to look for. Of course, you're going to look for a good lender who offers a good price, but you also probably want to look for convenience. You want Rocket Mortgage. If you are a geek, and I know you are, you wouldn't be watching this show, you probably want to do everything online. Now, sure, there are people, your mom maybe, who wants to go to a bank and meet the guy who's going to write the loan and maybe go through a bunch of papers, show pictures of her son, things like that. This is not for you. This is not for her. If you're the kind of person that says, let's get it done. Let's get a loan in minutes, not weeks and days and months. Let's get a loan right now. Let's do it all online at Quicken Loans. QuickenLoans.com/NSS. Rocket Mortgage, you could do everything. You could do it in an open house. You could do it from your couch. Pick the house you want. Apply for the house. Apply for the loan. Walk through it. They'll even let you change the rate and term of the loan. You could do it all online, and you're going to get approved in minutes. In minutes! For a loan that's just right for you. And by the way, this is a loan from the best lender in the country, Quicken Loans. They wrote $92 billion in loans last year. They have customer satisfaction awards every year since 2010, year after year, is the best loan company in the world. You're going to love them. QuickenLoans.com/NSS. And you're going to really love this loan approval process. Go to Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/NSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Quicken Loans, it's Rocket Mortgage, quickenloans.com/NSS.
It makes me kind of sad to hear that ad, though, because I live in San Francisco, where a studio started like $800,000. So I'm going to Rocket Mortgage nothing.
You got nothing here. If you move up here, move up here. It's cheaper. You get a lovely place. You can live. You can
what
afford.
What goes on up here?
Well, we don't have any fun.
Oh,
but it's affordable.
Is there brunch? Is there brunch up here? Can you brunch?
We don't do brunch.
Oh, then I'm not coming. That's like my one minimum requirement for a city.
We have lunch boxes.
No, that won't do either. Okay. No, not so much.
All right, it's time to bring Russ Pitts on the line. He's the president of TakeThis.com. He founded Take This 5 years ago. Hello, Russ. It's great to see you again. You haven't changed a bit.
Well, that's not entirely true, but it's good to see you too, Leo. I think I had a little bit more up here.
I don't remember that.
No, it's fine. So I didn't. It's great. I've been like, I had no hair the whole time.
Yeah.
How are you, sir?
If you want to read Russ's Ode to the Ages, which everybody, as you left Tech TV, just loved and laughed and turned out to be exactly right, by the way, you can just Google Eagle Semen. And it's all there.
It's in book form now, available on Amazon.com.
What?
Oh, yeah. I wrote my entire time at Tech TV up to leaving.
Oh, you have a memoir.
I do.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's called, in fact, Eagle Semen.
Can we say that on this show? Is that
we could say anything we want. But John is going to come over and slap me on the head. So tell me what Take This is and why. And look, Tom Merritt wrote the foreword.
Tom Merritt wrote the foreword.
Yeah. Why did you found Take This?
After leaving Tech TV, I worked in theater, went back to the professional theater for a while, and then got into technology and video game journalism as a writer and website editor. And after about 10 years of that, I had gotten to know so many people that I knew a lot of different types of people. And then we started to lose some of those friends. In fact, my wife was a editor at the time, too. And we realized about 2012, we realized that we were losing people to depression. And these were people that we didn't know were dealing with anything. We didn't know that they were dealing with depression or that they were, having trouble in their lives. And, just one day they're there and the next day they're not. And it's kind of shocking. And you ask yourself, when something like that happens, you ask yourself, what could I have done, right? Like if I knew this friend of mine was struggling, what would I have wanted to say to them to keep them from hurting themselves? And we asked a lot of friends if there was a need for an organization dealing with this problem of depression and anxiety in technology and gaming space, and the answer was unanimously, yeah, absolutely. So our answer was Take This. If we could have said one thing to these friends of ours that we had lost, it would have been, you're not alone. There are people who deal with these things. It's normal. One in four people in the United States deal with some mental health issue. That's so normal. It's ridiculous that people don't feel like that's something they can talk about or get help for. So we found it Take This to encourage people to share their stories and hopefully chip away at that stigma of mental health issues that keeps people from getting help.
Do you think it's a worse problem in the tech community than in the general population?
I do. We say that one in four statistic comes from Harvard Health.
Right.
We have anecdotal evidence that suggests that in the tech community it's as high as one in two, or 50%.
That sounds very correct.
It's been your experience. We know there are a lot of high-profile suicides we know of, people like Aaron Schwartz. But why is it, do you think, that the tech community is it that you think that sometimes people are drawn to computers because they don't have to deal with people so much?
I think that's partially true. But Russ, what do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a, it becomes an interesting sort of salve or an interface to communities that can be difficult for people to deal with. They have that technological interface, and technology is a little bit more binary, a little easier to understand.
It's also, I think this has changed since, I got into technology when, the Apple was coming out, Apple II was coming out, and the and it was really geeks and nerds and in clubs. But what happened when the internet became widespread, I think a lot of people gravitated toward technology because it was a way to be social and be in a community, but you didn't have to step outside of your comfort zone. You could find a community that you were comfortable with, and often you literally didn't have to step outside of your home.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember back when the AOL instant, AOL chat rooms were around, right? You could find a community of people right. and that you would have common interests with who might be all the way around the world, right? And so you find a community online where you might not have the comfort level to build a community in person.
The beauty of this is it's also a great way to reach out to people who are struggling. And that's what Take This is all about. And I think it's wonderful, you know, as I've, of course, family members with mental illness problems, some have been hospitalized.
Sure.
I'm very well aware of this. And I really think this is so important. In fact, I, as soon as you started the Kickstarter, I immediately kicked in on this. I can't remember who told, was it Georgia Dow? Somebody told me about this. It, the Kickstarter's over, though. You got funded.
Yeah, we just closed on Thursday.
Nice.
Thursday afternoon. This was for our AFK room program.
Tell me about this.
Yeah. So this is something that actually came from a need that my wife and I both experienced. We would cover these conventions for our respective publications, and they'd just be masses of people, you know, constantly on the go, and there's this stress to, you know, to do everything at a convention just because you're there, and it only happens once a year. So what we do with the AFK Room program is that we actually recruit local area clinicians in all the cities that we go to. We build a staff of trained, vetted volunteers. Something about mental health experts, actually, a lot of people don't realize is that many of them don't like technology and video gaming.
right? For good reason, yeah.
So we work hard to make sure that our volunteers are on our side of the fence on that, and we bring them in and we establish these rooms, and it's basically the most boring room at the convention by design, so that if you're burned out, if you're struggling, or if you just need a break, you can come to this room, and if you want to recharge your phone or recharge your, you know, your mental resources. But we also have our trained mental health experts there in case someone comes in who needs more. And true story, almost every convention we go to, we see at least one person come in experiencing a serious mental health issue. And occasionally it's something as serious as suicidal ideation.
Wow.
Our folks are trained to recognize that, do what they can, and in cases where they can't help the person, then to call in the emergency services who can get them to the help that they need.
That's awesome. You did, at Polygon, you did a series called Human Angle. Mm-hmm. Are you still involved in that?
In a way, yeah. We did one series of Human Angle at Tech TV, which was a high profile. We got a funding from Microsoft, a sponsorship, and we did about 13 episodes really looking at human beings in video gaming space. My favorite one by far was the John Marston show, which was the voiceover actor who did Red Dead Redemption. Who was he? Where did he actually came from? A small town in Indiana, the same small town that John Cougar Mellencamp sings about in his song "Small Town."
Wow!
But there's lots of stories like that in video games. These people you wouldn't expect would be making video games. I produced that series for Polygon, and we weren't able to get a second season going at Polygon. So then, when I left, that was one of the projects that I would hear from people they wanted to see more of. So I did another Kickstarter. I kickstarted a spiritual second season of that show. We call it Stage of Development. I just published our Stage of Development Chicago. We called it the Indie City. We did five episodes based in Chicago, interviewing people who represent the growing Chicago indie scene, which is
that's
amazing.
Neat.
It's a wonderful place.
You've made a Kickstarter. You've become the master of Kickstarter. That's awesome. That was also
so,
fully funded. That's
Russ,
great.
One thing I've noticed in the last couple of years talking to people inside of tech and also tech media is that there's a little bit more conversation going wrong about individual mental problems, mental health issues, and so forth. Is that happening all across technology, or is it just in my group? There's more conversation about what's going on.
In other words, the awareness has been raised.
People are more comfortable talking about it. Like,
yeah.
People tell me stuff
okay.
about themselves in yeah. conversation that's private.
Good.
And I feel like that's good. But is that happening across technology or just more around here?
No, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of high-profile people who have been more comfortable speaking about the issues they've experienced. Will Wheaton, for example.
Right.
And I think that bubbles down. And that's part of what we were hoping that we could help happen with Take This. In fact, I'm in that boat myself. You know, Leo mentioned my time at Tech TV. At the time, I was dealing with depression, and
I had no idea. You seem so happy-go-lucky and funny and smart, and little did I know, right?
Well, it's one of the things when you're dealing with a mental health issue is you learn to cover it up because it's like being the wounded animal in the herd, right? You don't want anybody to know because you feel weird about it.
Well, and it's stigmatized. I mean, people – it's still the case that mental illness is hugely stigmatized, and that's one of the things that's holding back appropriate treatment and dealing with it appropriately in society is that people – it scares people. I mean, what – most – I was talking about this with my daughter the other day. Most horror movies are about mental illness, really, right?
Right. Who wants to
That's
be the next?
Horror. We've stigmatized it so much that we can't talk about it reasonably. And yet, it's so widespread, not just in our field, but in everywhere, in all of life. And so how did you get help, actually, Russ? How did you solve this for yourself?
Well, after about 10 years of probably more than that, of not dealing with my issues. Actually, it wasn't until I got involved with Take This. My wife and I, we had a good friend, Dr. Mark Klein, 30-plus year practicing clinician, and he helped us found Take This. We had been doing it for about a year and a half, going to conventions, giving lectures, and I was at a major convention giving a lecture about how to accommodate mental health issues. And I realized as I'm giving this talk, I'm such a phony.
It's about me.
I'm such a hypocrite. Like I have been resisting dealing with my own issues for so long. And so I got home and I talked to my doctor and she recommended some treatment and I started seeing a therapist. And from there, it's just been up and up.
Good. I'm really happy to hear that for you personally. And I'm thrilled that you got funded, that we're going to have these AF key away from keyboard rooms. Where are we going to see these first?
So we're at all four of the major PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo conventions around the world, Seattle, Boston.
Yeah.
We are at E3 this year, the Electronic Entertainment Expo. In fact, the Entertainment Software Association is one of our major sponsors this year.
Bravo.
Yeah, we're very proud to be working with them. They've acknowledged that this is an issue not only among the attendees, but in the video game industry itself. We actually do consulting with video game companies about how they can make their studios more mentally healthy and how they can deal better with mental health issues. And the ESA is a partner for us in that as well.
Russ, you're doing God's work. I think it's wonderful that you're doing this. Anything that we can do to raise awareness and then offer people some hope and some succor and this, if you're at PAX or if you're at E3, how could you find the AFK room?
At the PAX events, for sure, we're in all the brochures and all the maps. You'll be able to see our little wing with the shield logo. The room we're in varies, and you can always ask one of the staff. We do train all the shows that we're in. We do training with the staff who actually run the show to help them recognize and help people who are dealing with mental health issues so they're aware of us. If you need help, feel like the AFK room is something that you want to visit, or if you're in distress, ask one of the staff members or look for our little logo and we'll be there for you.
Look for that shield. And there's somebody there who cares. And it's a calm room and you can relax and be yourself. And I like that. Russ, thank you so much. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you too, Leah. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Are you ready for the mailbag? Would you like to answer some questions?
I am ready for the mailbag, although that was a pretty serious segment, but one that I'm really glad we touched on. I feel like anything we can do to talk more about mental health stuff is
so
good.
I agree.
Just talk about it more often.
Well, and I wanted to get it on this show because I know that many people who are watching are perhaps fighting this illnesses of various kind, and I hear from people all the time, and I worry about y'all. So, let's all hang together and help each other because we're all in it together.
Yeah.
Don't cry. It's okay. no, cry. No, it's good to cry.
Now I'm just very confused about what we're doing next in the show. Do you want tears or
rolling,
not?
No tears. We're rolling in the mail, the mailbag. But I'm sincere in that.
I know.
Really is something that the tech industry needs to kind of acknowledge.
Right? All right. There's two, right?
There are two. There can be only two. Right. You pick one, I shall pick the other.
That one.
I always give the guest the first choice, but I get the first email in this
That's
case.
The one that I know how to answer, I think. Great.
Swap. You start.
With my carrier, Sprint, having stopped the practice of packaging a two-year plan with a new phone purchase, I am left paying $600 plus for a late model phone, iPhone 6. Are there any other options for someone needing to replace a failing phone and wanting to stay with my older model but doesn't have the $600 of room in this month's budget?
See, this is something that kind of bugs me, and then I'll let you answer this.
No, sure.
So they always hid the cost of the phone. Right.
It was buried deep in the contract.
Right. And all phones were $200 plus 2 years contract. And what they would do is they would take the price of the phone, they'd spread it out over those 2 years, and you'd be paying the data plan plus an amortized cost of the phone.
Exactly.
And often these phones were very expensive, but you didn't know because you're paying it over 12 or 24
You think
months.
It's only $200 and then that's what cell service just costs.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So in a way, I was glad, and I think it really changed the landscape when companies stopped this subsidizing practice. Because then, now we know what a phone costs, although you're going to get massive sticker shock. The other thing that really irks me is they did not then lower the cost of their package because they're no longer...
No,
said, oh, good, we can keep that $20 a month.
Never going to get a discount.
Now, most companies still offer you a payment plan for phones?
So, interestingly enough, the last time I got a phone from Verizon was about 2 years ago. I had to kind of fight and argue in the store to get the $200 and then two-year plan.
What?
They really moved people off
They didn't want people.
And so when I got this one about a month ago, I just really walked into an Apple store and said, give me a phone, and I gave them about $8 trillion. But I didn't want to change my actual wireless plan. But for Tim here, he says he wants to stay with his older model phone, but doesn't have budget. So it's a reading question. Do you think he means he wants the same phone again? Or does he want to fix his phone? I wasn't quite sure.
Well, he clearly is worried about the $600 cost of replacing it, whatever that model might be. You certainly can go to places like Gazelle and buy a used version of that.
Do you recommend people actually do that, or is that too risky, do you think, for the average person?
Well, not with Gazelle.
I think Gazelle
is, and they were a sponsor. I don't think they are anymore, but they're absolutely legitimate. They recondition the phone. They test the phone. And
so
I
would say to your friends, Gazelle's fine.
Absolutely. Okay. And there are other places. You know, Apple has its own program because... As you may remember, when you turn in an iPhone now, when you buy a new iPhone, they'll take your old iPhone and they'll pay and they'll give you money for it, much like Gazelle does. And what do they do with those old phones? Well, some of them they sell in the developing world, but some of them they'll resell. You could buy a refurb phone from Apple. But I would also ask your carrier. You know, when I bought the Samsung Galaxy S8, the default from T-Mobile was pay monthly for 2 years. It was not. I mean, they said you could, if you want, pay the whole amount. I think they understand most people are not prepared to spend $700, $800, or $600 on a phone right now. That's a massive expenditure. I'm glad that you know what it costs, though. I think what was happening is you were making that massive expenditure, and they were hiding the cost.
So the awareness is very important for the consumer.
I think you should know that when you're buying a new phone... And you can choose. There are $200 phones. There are $400 phones. There are $50 phones.
Yeah.
You can choose a less expensive phone, but you can't choose a less expensive phone if you don't know what the true price of the phone is.
So for Tim, if you were to recommend a phone, let's say around $300.
I would absolutely, without hesitation, exactly that price, the Motorola G6.
From earlier in the show.
And that's not the same one, and that's a little confusing. LG's G6 is a high-end flagship phone.
Mistake.
Motorola makes an inexpensive, I think very good Android phone for $200 to $300. The G5 is the old one. I think they have a... No, maybe it's G5 now. Anyway, the latest Motorola G phone.
So, Tim,
those are excellent.
If you can't get an installment plan, try that phone. If that doesn't work, come over, ask Leo for a phone. He has like 14. He'll just give you one.
I do hand out phones.
Go to his home address.
I frequently hand out phones.
And then it'll work out great.
It's the Motorola G Plus 5th Edition, or G5.
Who names these
things? Plus, I know. But that's $229, and that is a very good Android phone that actually is, you know, doesn't feel like a cheap phone. It's well made. They don't, you know, Motorola is very good about not over junking up the phone interface. It's a pretty pure Google phone. They promise they're going to keep it up to date, which is nice. Remember, they were owned by Google for a while. And at that price, it's half the price of less than half the price of that iPhone. I think that's a better choice. Now, if you really want an iPhone, Apple does not make discounted iPhones. The least expensive iPhone is the SE. That's about $400. And that's really an iPhone 5 with iPhone 6S guts.
Yeah. It's okay, but I can't imagine going back to that small of a screen.
Well, some people like the small screen. So that's what you're giving up. You're giving up the big screen. Or you can buy a used iPhone from one of these vendors. But Apple does not sell cheap phones. They don't want to. This phone is ridiculous. This 7 Plus was, by the time I added the memory, I wanted about $1,000.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, this plus Apple Care, this is the lowest capacity 7 Plus. But it was a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. I was like,
I need this, but swipe? Yeah.
I mean, it's more expensive than your computer these days. Right?
This is equivalent to the gaming rig I was going to build.
Yes.
And I got this instead.
Yes.
Hey.
So I think it's I'm glad we know what the cost is because we can start thinking about, is that a reasonable, you know, instead of just default, well, I got to have the latest phone. Is that a reasonable expenditure? The other thing you can do, almost all the carriers have a get the next phone plan
where
you spend a certain amount a month, $20, $30 a month, and every time the new, if you really have to have the latest phone, then at least you know you're going to have a set monthly fee and you're just going to get the new phone whenever it comes out. You might want to look into that.
Sure. I mean, there's a bunch of options. I would just say, Tim, just have a lot of fun because you're not going to run out of space here.
This is from, doesn't have a name.
Catherine?
All right. Says Catherine there. can you give me information on Fire Sticks? Ooh. Is that the ones made by the Aborigines in Australia? The fire? Oh, no, that's a rain stick. Fire Sticks as a replacement for cable TV. I understand I'll need the internet, but do I need a certain speed? I would like to lower my cable.
Oh, this is interesting.
So that's the Amazon TV, Fire TV, in a little... I should have brought my Fire Stick in. That way you could see it there. It's a little... like almost like a USB key, but it's not USB. It plugs into the HDMI port. You have a remote control. You can speak to it. It has kind of like Echo built into it. It is like an Android. There are a lot of these devices, like an Apple TV or a Roku or an Android TV. The idea is it adds internet television to your standard old TV. You can eliminate your cable, but you won't necessarily get all the features of cable television.
That's what I wanted to point out. You can't just put this in and get the same package.
You're not going to get Channel 5. You're not going to get Channel 7. You're not going to get Channel 2.
Or 3.
But you're going to get Netflix. You'll get Amazon's own TV service, which is quite good if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber. If you want to watch high-def content, you should have at least 15 megabits down.
Okay.
If you want to watch ultra-high-def 4K content, I'm of the opinion you should have 50 megabits down. You need a lot of bandwidth because you're getting a lot of bits. And you know what you don't want is buffering every 10 seconds. That really makes a show
unwatchable. That ruins any experience. Yeah.
So that's the other thing is often when an ISP quotes a speed, they're quoting kind of the maximum speed. You want a good ISP that's going to give you consistent results. And you know, for that, you're going to have to shop around, maybe ask around. Let me show you, though, the newest system. And this, by the way, does not require a Fire Stick. This will work on a Chromecast, which is $35. Chromecast's a little different than Amazon's Fire Stick. Amazon's Fire Stick is a little computer. It has an operating system, memory, it's CPU. You plug it in. It's running on the TV. It's a little computer. Chromecast is a little weird. It's a little different. It is a Wi-Fi device. You plug in the same port on your TV, but the way you use it is you'll fire up Netflix or Amazon or any app that supports it on your phone or on your tablet, and then you'll cast it. You'll say, play that on my TV, and then the Chromecast takes over and continues to play. It is a computer of a kind, but it is... a little less expensive and a little simpler.
It does a little less. It won't do voice recognition or anything like that.
Well, it will because...
Oh, it does now.
Well, if you think about it, you're not talking to the Chromecast. You're talking to your phone.
Right. It's still a dumb proxy.
It's a dumb proxy for your phone. But one of the things it supports, and I'm very excited about this, and I was kind of talked about it at the beginning, is this new YouTube TV. It's going to be $35 a month. It's a very limited market right now, only in 5 cities. But let me show you. This is the interface for YouTube TV. This is...
Oh, the expanse is on it. Oh, I may actually have to sign up.
So these are the channels that I can get here in the San Francisco Bay Area. It includes Channel 2, which is, excuse me, our local Fox affiliate. By the way, don't you love this... Don't you love this cable guide where you're actually seeing the video play you choose it?
This is a non-ugly television guide. It's the first one I've ever seen.
I know. I mean, right away, I like this. We're getting Channel 2, which is Fox, Channel 5, which is CBS, Channel 7. These are the locals, right? You could tell that's the local weatherman. We're getting NBC, which is Channel 11. Then these are the more basic cable channels, the CW, ESPN 1 and 2. It's very big on sports. You also get the ESPN Southern Conference, ESPNU. You get ESPN News, Fox Sports 1 and 2, NBC Sports Network. We have some Bay Area stuff, too. NBC has a Comcast or a Sports Bay Area. There's some weird things missing from this, though. CBS Sports, golf. They have news channels, but they only have MSNBC and Fox News. They don't have CNN. I don't know if that's a bad thing. They have some kid channels, but they don't have Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network. They weren't able to make the deals, I think. They've got E. They just added AMC. They've got Bravo, CNBC.
It's odd they have MSNBC, Fox, CNBC, and not CNN.
Well, CNN, does stand out. Remember, AOL, Time Warner, and it's the problem is with a lot of these, they've got their own deals, maybe right. with Hulu or PlayStation View. You can add Showtime for an additional fee on this, and there's a soccer network you can add. But one of the things I really like about this is it's got a built-in DVR. So I'm looking at a show. Let's say these are some of the shows. Let's say I don't ever want to miss the San Francisco Giants. I can just click a button on here, and it'll automatically DVR it. Despicable Me's coming on. I'd really like to see that. Let's just press that plus button. It's done. That will be DVR'd, and it'll show up in my library.
So, but you still have to wait for it to come on the television channel.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't just do it on
demand. I'm recording it, just like I would if I had a DVR at home. I'm recording it.
But as a non-cable person, that blows my mind. Why not just give you access to the content so you can just watch it?
Because it hasn't been aired yet.
But why does it need to be aired?
Well, because I'm recording it.
This is the internet, not the television.
No, but it is. That's what's interesting. This is YouTube TV.
I don't understand the difference.
And it is as if you had a TV subscription, like a cable subscription, but it's over the top. It's over your internet.
So I think this is YouTube, quite good. But television content, but hard to watch.
Here's what's missing on this.
Okay.
You don't get a remote. You need an app. It's Android or iOS. Or you can Chromecast, which means you can watch it on your big screen, but you can watch it on a tablet. You can watch it on a phone. I love the DVRing. You can support up to 6 people in your family. They each can have their own unlimited DVR. And by the way, as the YouTube generation, you also, all the YouTube stuff's here too. You know, your YouTube channels are here, so you can watch YouTube on it as well, which is awesome. I mean, it's as if it's YouTube Plus. And I think Google has made a very, very credible offering here. It is not on the Fire TV, however.
Do you get YouTube Red if you get YouTube TV?
No, unfortunately.
So there's still distinct
stuff to buy Red separately. Okay. All right. CNN is on Sling TV. There are other choices. There's AT&T DirecTV Now. Okay. There's Sling TV. There's PlayStation View. And they're similar offerings. But I think, and by the way, they're more widespread, but I think the locals is going to be a big thing. And this is from Google and YouTube, and I think this is going to be very interesting. Anyway, it's not exactly an answer to your question. The Fire TV is great. If I were you, I would also look at a Chromecast solution with something like this. I would also, we showed the NVIDIA Shield a couple of weeks back. Nathan reviewed it. It's a little more expensive. It's a couple hundred bucks, but that's Android TV. And it's 4K, and it's beautiful. I'm a big fan of Android TV, which is similar to the Fire Stick. These are all competitive. In fact, Amazon, which makes the Fire Stick, won't sell Apple TV because it's competitive. And by the way, the Roku, of all of them, the Roku might be the best, at least in terms of number of channels. Do you have something like this at home?
No. I have an Apple TV.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. I guess that counts. Yeah. But it's not like a Fire Stick equivalent, no.
It's very similar. The advantage of Apple TV is the only one that will play Apple stuff, iTunes.
Yeah, but I don't use any of that. I just watch Netflix on it, effectively.
Well, see, YouTube. Everything has Netflix. Everything has Netflix, except, YouTube TV.
Netflix is not a platform player. They're a player on platforms.
You say that as if you were a financial analyst.
You know, day job.
By the way, that's where you're going to find Mr. Alex Wilhelm. I didn't mention that, and I apologize.
That's okay.
At Crunchbase.
Our site's finally up. Yeah, so if you want to go check it out, go to crunchbase.news, and your financial mind will be met with happy thoughts.
Is a site aimed at somebody who's investing? Who's it aimed at?
Anyone who works inside of tech and wants to understand the venture capital and startup worlds a little better. It's all about money inside of tech.
So it's a great gig. I'm very proud of you that
you
signed up there at Crunchbase. Crunchbase.news. News.
Indeed.
Not.com.
Well, you can go there, too. It's just not where my stuff is.
It's spun off from TechCrunch.
Yeah. Well, it was spun off from Verizon after Verizon bought AOL and AOL bought TechCrunch, which owned Crunchbase. So if that doesn't make sense,
don't get confused. It is not Oath.
It's not Oath. I have taken no oaths of fealty to anyone, let alone Verizon.
We didn't even mention the new name of Yahoo is Oath?
No. It's Yahoo, AOL, kind of, and you get Oath out of that.
Yeah,
there's a good TechCrunch story about why it's dumb. If you want to go read that, it's dumb. It's dumb and bad.
I'll tell you what my problem is. Okay, so,
all right.
You used to be, if you couldn't Google it, you'd Yahoo it, right? But now you have to Oath it.
You can still Bing it, I think.
I am not Oathing it.
I'm not going to Oath anything.
Oath it.
I want to know how much corporate money was spent inside of the AOL Yahoo Miasma to generate.
You know. They spent at least $1 million on some branding company to come up with the worst name I've ever heard.
Not to mention employee time and distraction, and then a bad media cycle, and then crisis PR. Killing it, guys. Yeah.
It's even worse run than it was.
Oh, wait. Actually, I think AOL's an investor. Okay, that's bad. Hi. I mean, you all are great.
Aren't you part of the Oath family?
No, not tech. Well, kind of. It's gray. It's gray. I'm making a phone call.
Hello. Can I speak to Alex, please?
Just hang up immediately.
Jeff, what's his name? Want to remind everybody to vote for us. We are winning, right? But that doesn't mean we should get complacent. I don't know how this happened. The Webbies have started honoring podcasts. And we are up for a Webby Award in the People's Choice section, Technology, for our Triangulation, the interview show I do, which I think is great. Now, are we up for that one show? So it's the interview that we did with Snowden's lawyer. Okay.
Yes.
So if you would do me a great service, a favor, and go to we've actually made a special shortened URL for you, which is twit.to/Webby. He's nodding. /Webby 2017. Because we figure we're going to get nominated next year. Boy, that's ambitious. twit.to/Webby2017. You can go there, and if you would do me an honor, you do have to sign up, but you can use your Twitter account or your Facebook account.
Yes, I did this for the show.
Only so you can't vote more than once unless you have both a Twitter account and a Facebook account.
He may be winking, but I voted for you, and you were I think, 30% above the second place, which was 28. So
we're competing against Marketplace. We're competing against GE. We're competing against BBDO. And Vice Media. I mean, we got some serious competition. So
if you win a Webby, what do you get?
You get a spring-shaped award, I think, something like that.
Fantastic.
It's a spring. It's like a little. I'll put it on the set. There you are. And I get to meet Jessica Alba, apparently. So that's nice. Anyway, twit.to/Webby2017. That would be very nice if you would vote.
I voted for you, and if I could do it twice, I would.
It just helps publicize the shows.
Yeah. Also, it's, well-deserved.
And I can retire.
Kind of deserved. Not deserved at all.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Alex Wilhelm. Congratulations on the launch of Crunchbase.news.
Thank you.
Well done. I'm glad you're gainfully employed. Your career as a skateboarder is now over.
Thank heavens. That was a rough time.
We also thank you for being a good part of the Twit family.
Oh, thank you.
And your girlfriend, she's doing okay. Did she get into Brown?
She got into Brown.
Yeah! She's living in my childhood home.
Yeah, so
it's a weird nexus.
If you missed that, go back in time. But yeah, she got triple board at Brown.
Nice! High five. Yeah. What else do I want to say? We do this show every Saturday afternoon, right after the radio show, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. You can tune in live. Be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. We like you guys there. And if you can't do it live, you can always do it on demand, as with all of our shows. In this case, it's twit.tv/NSS, new screensavers, twit.tv/NSS, or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Thank you for being here. Did we enter this show in the Webbies?
No.
No. Okay, good.
Emmys, yes.
I don't like to compete against myself. Ooh, we entered this one in the Emmys.
Really?
Oh,
just don't send them the ones that I'm on, I think, is the correct way to increase your chance of winning.
Is Alex on the one we sent him? No? All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the New Screensavers. Bye-bye!
Reggie! Oh, nice. Didn't even crash.
It didn't even crash.